We're about to get extreme here on AfterBuzz TV.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
We are here live on AfterBuzz TV, ready to cover Extreme Rules 2019.
Extreme.
2009. Say that again.
Extreme.
I think it generated like from like Extreme Rules from One Night Stand. Extreme Rules, which is coincidentally because tonight was in Philadelphia, home of ECW, which was home of Evolve last time. If we have time, I'd love to talk about that show. But we got a new face. I'm gonna just start off straight off the bat. This nice, pretty face that you got. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it.
Keep
and that's
going.
With a nice shirt. I know that's your
my confident shirt.
That's right. And who are you? I don't even know who you are. Who are you?
Well, I'm Jack Farmer. I'm super pumped to be here. I got to be on AfterBuzz's Raw show just a few weeks ago. Now I'm on Extreme Rules, so things are looking up for Jack Farmer.
Nice. So what about you?
Third person. Jack Farmer says, of course, it's my voice in the house. Thank you so much for inviting me on the Extreme Rules After Show, my man.
Of course. I am George Hermoza, G-H-E-R-M-O-Z-A. We're going to get right into it because I don't want to waste time not talking about it. Extreme Rules, just overall thought of the show, Jack. Like, just general. Like, show ended. What was your first thought that came into your mind?
It was a very perfect example of it's all about how you end it. Because that's the thing that I think we're all thinking about right now is how the show ended. And I know we're going to get into it in a little bit, but I personally loved it. I'm a big fan of how it ended, and so I am buzzing after it.
What about you? What about you, Flobo?
Overall, I liked it. I think the pay-per-views that came out after WrestleMania and coming up to SummerSlam are good. If anything, it's almost too many of them. But like Extreme Rules really had some moments in there that I really like. We'll get into each individual match. Solid pay-per-view, solid effort, and I'm now getting warmed up to the whole four-hour pay-per-view thing for everything, if that makes any sense.
Oh, well. Yeah. So we're going to get right into the main event. We had the man and the man's man, by the way, hate that t-shirt. Cannot stand that t-shirt. It's the man's man, but whatever. Going up against Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans. Now, Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans. Hello?
Thanks.
Round one. Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans coming off last month, their championship title matches. Now we're going to combine them all. What are your thoughts immediately about these guys main eventing for maybe the first time in a big main event slot, Jack?
I felt like this was one match too many for these guys, seeing them over the past few months going again and again and again. I'm not a huge Corbin fan. I'm not.
Why not?
I think he's fine. I think he's a fine wrestler or a fine performer, but he's just been way overexposed for who he is, I believe. I've always said I think he'd be a great like tag team guy with someone else, but I think he's a bit out of his bounds in the world title picture. And personally, I'm not really a huge fan of the way the Rollins and Lynch dynamic has been working as a couple. So for me, as a match on its own before the ending, it was a bit flat for me. It just wasn't – it didn't pop for me.
Well, I will get your thoughts, Flo, in a second, but I like what you just said about Rollins and Lynch. I went on a rant – maybe not a rant – at the last pay-per-view after show where I said, I wouldn't be surprised if it turns out that the Seth Rollins-Becky Lynch relationship is a work. Do you think it is or –
I think they might make it a work for the line. I think they really are dating.
It just feels like everything's so out there. Like it feels like if you never knew that, you know, the TMZ story, or whatever, mm-hmm. like you would think that it's a work.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
I think they're actually dating though, but I feel like everything else is a work around it. The commentary have said it all the time. You know,
like what if they break up tomorrow?
Yeah.
Well, they gotta work through it. They gotta work through it. But
in a tag team match, player.
No. But I don't know. I feel like they come across more like a mid-card heel couple than a main event face couple. They just kind of make me cringe a little bit. I like both of them as individuals, but the relationship dynamic is kind of annoying.
It's like I don't think. Do you think they have on-screen chemistry? Is that what it is? I don't think they do.
Mm. It just, they feel like the annoying couple. That
they are the annoying
couple. I think there's a little bit of thing you can draw from having the top male talent, at least going in, and the top female talent, both being champions, and they're together, and they're both the best shape of their lives. They're both overlooked as traditional champions and things, too. But it is a bit overwritten, for sure.
Well, speaking of Becky Lynch as the champion, like, who's next for her? Obviously, it looks like this Lacey Evans storyline, I don't want to say it's finally over, but because I think Lacey Evans really did shine a few times in this feud. So what's next for Becky? I mean, this wild card feud kind of wild card rule kind of makes it anybody, really. So sure. who do you guys pick for Becky's next challenger?
It's a good question to ask, because I think Jack and I were watching the pay-per-view. We went through the women's roster on the Raw side, and it's like nobody really available and at that level. If I have to pull that card, I would definitely bring Sonya Deville over. She's the only person I would think that can go toughness versus toughness, but as far as the Raw roster is concerned, I don't see anyone taking on Becky Lynch.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, before diving into that, I do want to give a quick shout-out to Lacey Evans. I believe she carried that feud, personally. But, yeah, as far as the next person, Sonya Deville or Mandy Rose, but I don't really know if there's anyone else that you could bring up that wouldn't feel like a Natalie or yeah. No one that would say, oh, that looks like a legitimate contender.
Does Ronda come back in the next month or two?
I don't think so.
Or do they save that for maybe WrestleMania 36?
I would. I think Ronda Rousey is definitely a WrestleMania bump. I wouldn't have her come back.
Not for a SummerSlam?
Even though SummerSlam is literally my favorite pay-per-view of the year, I don't think I'll bring
Ronda. Mine's Stomping Grounds.
Is it really?
Yeah. or great Balls of Fire.
great Balls of Fire is a pretty big moment for WWE every year.
I don't know what happened last year. So
everyone pointing to the Great Balls of Fire sign, waiting for their moment, right. Their Great Balls moment.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned, Jack, you love the ending. You might be in the minority based on whatever I saw on Twitter, but, you know, we all saw the show. Brock Lesnar comes in and cashes in after Braun Heyman says he's going to do it. Yes. So why did you love the ending so much? Are you a Brock fan, or do you like him as champion?
I'm a Broccoli. I love Brock Lesnar. I know everyone else hates him, but he is just, look, he's a box office to me. When he's in WWE, I buy the WWE games. When he's in NFL, I buy the Madden games. When he's in the UFC, I buy the UFC games. That guy just, I want to buy any shirt or show he's on. I believe that he's dangerous. I feel like he's the only person who is currently in WWE that a win over him really means something. I think guys like Undertaker and Cena used to have that. But now, no one in WWE more personifies the, if you beat them, that's a big deal.
This is more about Paul Heyman than Brock Lesnar. I mean, look, I was a fan of Brock when he actually didn't skip leg day. But this old and bloated Brock, I don't know, man. I get why he has a championship. He is a threat in that way. But I cannot get on this other Brock Lesnar train after having him around and being absentee champion for so long, having him back in the mix.
Paul Heyman's managed other people.
Curtis Axel, for one.
And Curtis Axel, what's he doing right now?
Yeah, B team. Go.
So it's not just – Paul Heyman's great. Paul Heyman is the best mic guy I've ever seen. I'd put him ahead of even The Rock. I think he's amazing. I'm probably not going to get a lot of love for that comment. But
doesn't matter because you got that shirt on.
But I got the pink on, so it's okay. Right. I'm blending into the background a little bit maybe. No, he's great, but it takes more than just the mouthpiece. You have to have someone who can back that up. Mm-hmm. And Brock backs it up. He it's not just because he's booked to win, but he feels like a destructive force. I believe that he is someone that can tear people apart. And that's the difference between him and many other just big guys that used to beat people up.
So now, but he's champion, though, and it's okay. He can be there because he wasn't always champion when he came back in WWE. Why not just have him there as, like, an obstacle? Does he have to be the top guy as far as champion goes?
I think you should have him as the champion because he's the one that's going to sell tickets. But it also makes, if he's not the champion, then who would ever want to fight him? No one, because he's destructive.
Do you think that's why maybe that match with Dean Ambrose at Mania 32 really didn't work because there was really no stakes involved?
It's possible.
Yeah, I think that totally worked against it. But also, when it comes down to having a wrestling match, I don't think you can put Dean Ambrose in just, I'm going to take suplexes all day. I mean, he's not that kind of character. Mm-hmm. I think if you have a match like that, Dean cannot use his, mental cerebral faculties or whatever, and that puts him at a disadvantage. It just comes as another, like, punch-kick suplex kind of a match.
So what are we going to see a rematch at SummerSlam? Rollins against Brock, or...?
That seems to be the writing on the wall, but I think we're all burnt out by that. Because here's the reason why. Seth won that belt with 3 stomps. We saw that today. How does Seth do it again? And I think there should be some time in there. At least give Brock something fresh and if you're going to keep him as champion.
So who does he wrestle at SummerSlam?
Seth Rollins or Brock Lesnar?
Oh, Brock Lesnar.
It seems like it's got to be Rollins. I don't know if there's anyone else, except for maybe Braun Strowman.
Yeah, Strowman's the only other upper mid card face that won tonight. So it would be him, but I don't want to see that. Do you want to see that?
Not really.
Okay. It's settled. Brock is going to stand on a throne the entire SummerSlam and do nothing for 4 hours, clip this check.
And I would still be excited. I popped up off the couch when he won tonight.
You did do that.
I did.
Oh my gosh.
I was so excited. I'm all in on Brock. This is going to be a good summer.
And I know when Brock first won Money in the Bank, all the rumors were he was going to cash in on the first Fox show against Kofi Kingston. Obviously, that did not happen. We saw Kofi Kingston tonight against Samoa Joe. Kofi Mania is still running wild. What were your guys' immediate thoughts on the match? I know, you know, Kofi's been champion for a few months. I want to know what your guys' thoughts on the match, and how has his reign been so far, even compared to other WWE champion title reigns?
I feel like what Kofi's really missing is that big match to sort of hang his title reign on. He doesn't really have a match yet that you're like, that was his big
one. You don't think this is it? Because, for example, I know with Dolph Ziggler, he had Xavier Woods interfere. With the cage match, it was like, well, you know, he'd dive out of the cage. This was like a definite win. Is it against Samoa Joe, or is it? Do you think he needs to get face someone maybe a higher level than Samoa Joe? Like, what would be that level of W that you're looking for?
If you're asking me, he needs an opponent that can draw out many months of different layers of matches. So as long as he's been champion, and I love Kofi as champion, when he got the belt, I jumped off the couch, I almost cried, it was the moment. But he went through Dolph in a month and a half, he went through Kevin Owens in one pay-per-view, and now you pin Samoa Joe. A guy, despite what you throw at him, finds a way to be relevant and still be a draw. He beats him with a very, very sloppy Trouble in Paradise. And I love Kofi to death, but then, alright, you flatten Joe, and then what? Are you going to give him somebody else?
But who would you have him up against? Like, you know, for you, you just said it right now, he needs a very decisive victory, that moment as champion. What would you have him do?
I thought tonight was supposed to be that night, but I agree with Flobo. It felt very, the end kind of felt out of nowhere, but not in a good way, not in an exciting way. It was sort of a, oh, that got him. And I think that hurt the overall way I remember that match. There was a lot of good stuff in the match that I love Joe in it, though, more than I love Kofi, which is a bit of a problem. One of my favorite moments of the night was when Joe said, "Who's number one now?" after he did the finger bit. Yeah, that was a great moment. That's one of my favorite moments of the night. But I think they could go another round at SummerSlam. Him and Joe again.
You don't think that maybe Kofi versus Roman? Because I agree with what you said earlier, but I think they're going to have Kofi beat Roman in that big time match that maybe Kofi needs to elevate his status as, you know, a top WWE champion.
You can't do that. You can't have Brock the head of one brand and Kofi and Roman going ahead of the other brand. It'll be
Roman's
total reset.
On SmackDown though.
But what I'm saying is that optically, it will go back to 2017. It will be a bad idea. It will look like a whole regression the past year and a half. And I love Roman and I love Kofi. But if your two top guys are the same top guys that were 2 years ago, what is the point of call-ups in this?
But I take Kofi beats Roman. I don't want to see Roman as WWE champion. Yeah. I take Kofi defeats Roman to get him to that next level. Because, again, no disrespect to any of those guys, but Kevin Owens, Ziggler, Samoa Joe, like, Roman Reigns is on another level.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I'm totally agreeing with you, but I don't see Roman there. Roman is definitely good at being the upper mid-card like attraction match for now.
This is where I'd put the brakes on a Roman. I get where you're coming from, and I think that would make sense in a lot of ways. But the reason I wouldn't really go with that right now is because for the first time, people are kind of cheering Reigns legitimately. He's always had a bit of a mixed crowd at best, but whether people love or hate Shane McMahon, I guess everyone hates him, that's the thing, but whether or not you like him on TV or not, people hated him so much that it made them even like Roman Reigns beating him. And he's got a little bit of that goodwill now, and I think if you put him against Kofi, everyone's going to boo him. And
you
everyone's
so?
Going to... No one's going to cheer for Reigns over Kofi. Kofi's super lovable, and
he has pancakes. I'm sold.
Yeah.
I jest, but yeah, it'll be a bad idea for Roman, for sure.
So what does Kofi need? Like you said, against Samoa Joe, maybe at SummerSlam again?
I think they've at least got one more match in them. But I think Samoa Joe would have to go over if they did another match. Huh. I would think.
Hey, guys. Yeah. Josh in the booth here.
Hey, Josh.
I think it'd be a potential possibility that this might be where Bray Wyatt comes in as far as feuding with Kofi and establishing himself as a top guy. What do you think will happen?
I think when Bray comes back, I think he's going to be the biggest babyface on the entire roster.
You're probably right. So unless he does something horrible like attacks Kofi Kingston. Because you're right. Everyone's going to love seeing him again because everyone wants him on TV right now. And the Firefly Funhouse is while it was still going, was one of the most entertaining parts
TV. Like little cameos like in backstage, it's like I love the fact that they're kind of adding on Easter eggs like on Raw or SmackDown, you know, that you never really seen that before, you know. It makes you really want to watch, like, so-and-so Bailey's walking in the backstage, wait, do I see a bunny, do I see do I see Huskus back there, you know, I don't know.
Right
yeah it's so you're right, I think he will be a huge face unless they put him against a Kofi. That actually makes a lot of sense to have him face Kofi, because if he does come out and does just brutalizes Kofi, everyone's going to hate Bray.
Unless he comes back and brutalizes Brock.
No one brutalizes Brock.
Right. No one hits your boy. I'm sorry.
No, we did talk about Shane McMahon, how everybody hates Shane McMahon.
I do.
We saw him in action on the very first match of the night with Drew McIntyre against Roman Reigns and The Undertaker. What are you gonna say?
Undertaker jerked the curtain tonight? That's crazy. The first match is the Undertaker in a tag match. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, first off, from what I hear, the most important match other than the main event is the opening match. It sets the tone for the entire show.
Most times it can be, but to me it was interesting that you booked this particular character as its own sub attraction for so long that, or even if the main event, the sub main event, to have him in a tag match where it's already diminished, you're already sharing a spotlight, him being first was kind of out of place for me, I thought.
So did it ruin the match at all?
Did it ruin the match? No, but then at the same time, I was expecting something bigger because it was so early in the match. You're like, well, is there going to be a giant turn? Is someone going to show up? Will Bray Wyatt be in this match? Because, hey, it's Undertaker in a match at a pay-per-view that's not WrestleMania or Saudi Showdown, Super Showdown, or something like that. So I was waiting for something and it didn't happen. So I guess it did hurt in a weird way.
Yeah, the Undertaker is more than just a big-time wrestler at this point. Not to sound cliche, but he is an icon. And that the gong and the lights going out, that is a thing that is absolutely amazing every single time. And I know some people say he's getting old, but personally, it works for me every time. I love seeing it. And I think that's something you should have let build up over the course of the show so that it happened later. And so when it did happen, it would feel a little bit bigger.
So with this tag match happening, do you think this is the best way to use The Undertaker? Especially because I heard Michael Cole say it himself. This is the best Undertaker's looked in almost 5 years. It's like, first off, his match with Goldberg wasn't even that bad. Okay, it really was. Yeah, but is this the best way to use him? Or do we see him against Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam? Because he kind of we all saw that shot. We all saw that shot where Drew McIntyre comes up behind Undertaker, which was like,
yes,
you'll never see anything else like outside of WWE that, because that's perfect. Camera work.
As soon as it happened, as I said, Flo and I were watching together. Yeah. As soon as it happened, I said, "You're going to see that shot in promo videos and replays many, many times because that was perfect camera work." I don't know if that was planned or if that was just a lucky accident, but that moment was just a perfect shot for. Yeah, I definitely hope they build up to McIntyre versus Undertaker.
But do you think you want to see him in more singles matches? Because it doesn't sound like this was his last match. No. We're going to see him again.
Yeah.
Like, more tag matches? Like, I feel like they just had a t-shirt with both their symbols on it. Like, is this kind of like something to come? Maybe even Roman, you said? Like, maybe not the main event, but more teaming with The Undertaker?
I'm not going to say never say never, but there's two things that are conflicting idea. One, The Undertaker has been booked singular for so long, except for Kane. He's like this, you know, guy who walks alone in the darkness. It is weird seeing him tag with someone besides Kane. And two, it was never clearly established why they tagged in the first place. It was Undertaker saying, he didn't ask for my help, I just want to beat you up. But now you're wearing t-shirts like your buddies. So unless you explain that, I'm not saying give me a promo that, you know, we had our beer one night and it was great, and now we're a tag team. But to me, I got to find the connection as to why Roman would say, okay, I beat you at WrestleMania, but we're cool now. Or why would you go back to the same guy that beat you at WrestleMania?
Do you want to see maybe more Undertaker tag matches or singles matches?
Singles.
Singles, definitely.
Single matches is better for the character, but I mean, look,
anyone up against anybody over the age of 45.
I guess so, man. I did to protect him as a performer. Yeah, tag matches are great, but like as the Undertaker, it has to be single. I mean, that's because it drew it, man. You know.
Yeah, the character doesn't make sense for him to be buddies with another wrestler unless it was like a Kane. But that's something I don't really want to see tons anymore.
Right.
I think he doesn't need to be in the ring necessarily with super young guys that are going to bounce around the ring either. I think as long as he's in the ring with someone that can make it a psychological match or a smart match. No offense to Goldberg. I loved Goldberg back in the day, but he's not someone who's going to have, like, work through a bunch of great moves and things like that. He was built on just running someone over and pinning them, and that works, but it's not going to work when it's against The Undertaker. If you put him in the match with an older guy, you know, I think on Twitter they were teasing, like, a Sting thing a while back. I think him and Sting could have a good match, because I think those two would find a way to work with what they can do. But I think singles matches for sure would be better for that character. And I would love to see him with something with Drew, because I think Drew needs something like that to sort of step up from where he's at. And I think Undertaker, outside of Brock, still has enough credibility that a win over him still means a little bit of something. Not as much as it would to beat Brock, but to beat The Undertaker still symbolically means a lot.
Now, we saw Undertaker hit the tombstone on Shane McMahon. Is this going to put him out of action? Obviously, after that whole Kevin Owens promo, which we can talk about, Owen Ziggler, just how, I mean, that was there, you know?
Yeah. Well, I would hope that Shane gets, if not retired, but taken off the shelf. You know, we talk about how bad Shane is, as his punches are terrible, and his coast-to-coast thing. He used to be amazing, but it's kind of pedestrian, and he has, what, 4 segments a week. Objectively, it's not healthy for the business. The character has run its course. I hope he's off TV, but I will say this, as a writer of characters too, it would be so much easier to bring him back and say, well, I got a tombstone, but here's my new plan, which is kind of bad. But the credit to Kevin Owens and his new character is that he's quick to say, I'm not standing for this. And he's kind of become the voice of the people here, how much he's frustrated with the McMahons being front and center. So I hope that, as far as Kevin Owens is concerned, he gets to keep doing that. I hope Shane gets off television at least for a little while, but I'm not sure that's going to happen. I'm going to have to wait.
I don't think he's going to be off of television. I think he should be done in the ring. I think he at least needs to be on TV, though, just to keep whatever Kevin Owens is doing going. Because if you just take Shane McMahon away, now we go, well, what is Kevin Owens complaining about? Then everything he's done over the past couple weeks is now out the window. But I think it would be great if they had Shane McMahon pull back a lot, maybe act as a sub-authority figure, not someone who's doing the opening promo for 30 minutes every week, but, you know, just almost like a Regal on NXT, where he's there a little bit, does a few kind of GM type things, but then mostly sort of acts as a manager to a Drew McIntyre, and then maybe that facilitates the feud between a Kevin Owens and a Drew McIntyre down the road.
Would you like to see that, Owens versus McIntyre down the road, Phobo?
Yeah. This new Owens is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of turned up to 12 or 13, but I'm down to see him as a face.
If anybody can pull it off, it's Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens can do anything, I think. I think he's good enough on the microphone that if you want... I think he's doing great as a face. He's obviously a great heel.
Yeah.
He's someone that's easy to get behind. And he also is someone that... I always say kind of the mark of a great wrestler is someone who... If you don't watch wrestling and you see them doing, you turn it on, you see that, he's someone that you go, oh, what's this guy's deal? And he's someone that if you didn't watch wrestling a lot and, you know, I'm watching wrestling, you walk in, you'd say, what's his thing?
Yeah. Makes sense. I mean, another match we saw tonight was the handicap match with Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross against Bayley. I mean, what are you guys' thoughts about this? Maybe overall storyline is, are we going to start to see rifts between Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, and what's next for Bayley?
Sure.
I think the opposite. I think what we're seeing now is everyone's been trying to make us believe that Cross and Bliss, or Bliss is going to betray Nikki Cross. I think they're going to end up becoming a tag team and going after the tag team titles. And I think we're going to eventually grow to go, oh, this is actually a couple of friends. Oh, they're actually working together. Now they're going to go for the tag team titles.
As baby faces or heels? Or is it going to be that back and forth?
I think it might be a little bit of the back and forth, and I think they might start leaning towards babyface, and then as soon as it starts to get old, they have the very nicely built-in end game plan to just have Bliss turn on Cross down the road. And then we go, oh, this whole time it was she was doing this thing, and then you can kind of go from there. But right now, I think, because they did nothing at the end, they were hugging each other, they looked like they were friends afterwards. They obviously can't go for the women's title now. That's out the window. So I think they go, and try to start bolstering up the women's tag team division.
Sure. From a story standpoint, this is actually one of my favorite matches of the night. You established Bayley as a formidable champion. You could take two at once. You have Nikki Cross featured in an extended match that she could tell a story. Alexa Bliss obviously was protected. She didn't get her involved in the ring too much for whatever reason. And that storyline has Bayley as a champion. Now, should it be a tag team champion? A tag team team? I think so. That'd be kind of fun. The Iconics aren't really doing much. I do think Bayley is another competitor. And it's still kind of... addresses the elephant in the room of what Alexa can do. We're not really sure of her health. And mm-hmm. there's always that looming thing in the background. Is Sasha coming back? And she is coming back. Is it mm-hmm. going to be the SmackDown with Bayley or with Raw? Or what's a brand with the new wild card rules? So it told a lot of different story points at once, and I enjoyed it. I hope that Nikki gets to develop that new character on the main roster a little bit more. And I hope that Bayley has a fresh challenger come Tuesday.
What is next for Bayley? I mean, is this the same problem that we have with the Raw women's division, where it's kind of like, right, who's really next? I mean, Charlotte hasn't been on TV for a month, but we've sure. seen the Bayley Charlotte stuff already. Like, yeah. So what's next for Bayley?
Well, yeah, next for Bayley is definitely be a new challenger. SmackDown has a little bit more women in the roster. The aforementioned Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. We have Ember Moon's in the back somewhere. They also have the Kairi Sane and Asuka. I mean, they're a tag team bundle now, but they can always break one of those off for a quick feud. And also the NXT call-up. So there's a lot more options where to go with Bayley, more so than Raw. But you're right. I'm not really sure who's the clear-cut next challenger for her.
Yeah, I would say split up the tag team and have Asuka go for it. I don't think that tag team's work. I don't think anyone's really clamoring to see them compete, and it felt forced together to begin with. So I think you could just break off Asuka and have her just challenge, and it's already a legitimate threat to Bayley.
Well, speaking of tag teams, I'm going to try to bundle this all together. But first, we're going to start off with the SmackDown Tag Team Championship match, a triple threat match, Heavy Machinery, Daniel Bryan and Rowan, and The New Day, who became six-time champions. Now, it's a pretty cool visual seeing The New Day. I don't know, we all saw those tweets of, like, 5 years ago, you had Kofi, Woods, and Big E when they first started The New Day.
Yeah.
Now, did you see that picture at all? Woods put up like a side-by-side picture of before and now today where they're all champions,
yeah.
Which is fantastic. I mean, is it something where you think New Day needs a championship? The answer is obviously no, but is it the right fit? Like, I mean, who else is it better than the New Day, right?
I think the image of all of them with gold is awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool that they all have championships now. I think they needed to win it as well just to... I mean, they didn't really need to win it, but I think it's good for them to win it because they haven't held the titles in a little bit. Uh-huh. I think it's good to just reestablish them as they're not just a good team that used to win championships. They're still a championship team.
Something's very transitional about this one. Heavy Machinery was like the oddball group that's getting a little bit favored because they're more of the comedy thing. As much as I didn't like them, I do think that Daniel Bryan and Rowan kind of came into their own mm-hmm. as tag team champions, and especially having that same new Daniel Bryan character, which is, I think, awesome character work to go from the face to heel Bryan. Even though they weren't booked well, they lost a lot of pre-show matches with the titles. It was always great for them to be like, you know, we're your planet's champions, and didn't think that they were going to lose tonight and so cleanly and literally in the center of the ring. So I'm not sure where they're going. I like the New Day. I think they're amazing. They don't need the belts. It just feels like, all right, that's just a little bit extra icing on this cake.
Where would you rank the New Day on top tag teams of all time? Because you always hear the conversation, Steiners, LOD, Heart Foundation, Rockers, Rock and Roll Express. Like, I never hear anybody say New Day in the same breath, but when you really look back and see what they've done,
yeah.
Like, they should be up there, right? Like, where would you guys rank them on all-time tag teams?
It's weird because they operate like the Freebirds, but the Freebirds were considered a tag team, but they're more like a faction. Uh-huh. So I don't think that's why people don't think of them up front, but you're right. If I had to put New Day in there with their title reigns and their level for this long, it has to be top 10. If not,
yeah, easy top 10.
Top
yeah.
10, yeah.
Top 10 for sure.
Yeah,
top why not top 5?
Top 5, I think a lot of some of the other teams, like as I look at the Dudleys and the Steiners, I think there was a lot more focus on tag team wrestling during some of those guys' runs, where the New Day have gone through some periods where there wasn't a lot of focus on tag team wrestling. So the competition level, I don't think, was as high throughout their whole run. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't diminish anything they've done. Like, as Flobo said, top 10 for sure.
But what about the Revival? Revival versus Usos. I thought the match was great. Is this what we want to see? Like, everybody who was complaining about the Revival with the Uso hot and, you know, the butt cream or whatever the hell that they went through, the shave in the backs.
Yeah.
Is this what we wanted to see instead of what we saw before? You know, because like, everybody's complaining, like, oh, where's Revival? Like, they're getting buried. Okay, well, you just got a good match with the Usos. Right. Is this what you guys want?
You know what this reminds me of? When I was a kid, I really wanted a pair of Jordans. And my dad was like, I'm going to get you some Jordans. And he went to the store and got me a pair of Patrick Ewings. You know what I'm saying? On paper, it's everything I want. Okay, yeah, tag team wrestling, two great teams, top of the game. The Revival is being taken seriously. But what we got, the match was okay. The finish was all right. I don't think the Revival are any better or any worse for winning this match than the Usos, too. So is this feud over? Is the Viking Raiders in the mix? I don't really know. It was a solid match, but I don't think that I'm excited. But yes, tag team wrestling on Raw is back. It's like, all right, what happens tomorrow night on Raw? Is it going to have a, you know, random object on a pole match just to be funny again? Who knows?
Yeah, this was a good example, I think, of the build making this match feel a little flat, which seems to be the word of the night for me, flat. Mm-hmm. It's just, there was nothing wrong with it. There was nothing I'd say, oh, this was a bad spot or anything. It just, it didn't feel like the stakes were high. It didn't feel like it mattered which team won. In fact, I'm sure in a week I'll be going, wait, which team won? If it weren't for the champion, if it weren't for the titles to remind me, mm-hmm. I would probably forget who won.
Did you feel the same way about the Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley match? Because we saw what happened 2 weeks ago. This was, I guess, was the culmination. How did you guys feel about this match, Bobby Lashley against Braun Strowman, the last man standing?
I loved it. I've when I was on the Raw After Buzz, I actually said I had some criticisms of Bobby Lashley, but since that show, right. I have really started investing into Bobby Lashley. I think he's doing great. I love his just destructive, not talking a lot, just kind of going in, destroying people. And then him and Braun, I think, really did a good job. I thought it was a really good match, and it delivered everything you'd want out of a last man standing match.
Do you think Lashley is better or worse without Leo Rush?
Oddly enough, I would have said, I want to say he's worse without Leo Rush, but I like him more right now. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a weird.
Yeah, Leo Rush makes him polarizing, so you either love him or hate him with Leo Rush. But the problem I have with Lashley now is like, well, you're a guy with muscles who can fight, which is literally every single person on the roster. So the match itself was great, but going into it, it's Braun Strowman. I know that character versus Generic Wrestler 4 from Creator Wrestler. So, to me, the match was great. I think Lashley has some upside. I think he's better in position now, but ultimately, I have to care about him, which I don't.
Do you like Last Man Standing match? I hate him. Do you guys like him?
They're overdone.
Yeah, I think if they were done less often and only for really big things, it would mean more. But yeah, I don't like him. I shouldn't say I don't like him. I mean, they're fine, but it doesn't intrigue me more than if it was just a regular match.
I just don't get why they had them. Like, you had that big spot where they were out for like 5 minutes. So it's like, how do you think that, oh, let's put them in a last man standing match? They couldn't answer the 5 minute count. What makes you think if the same situation happens, you can answer a 10 count? We saw a winner, thank God, but I just don't get, like, it's like if nobody interferes, let's have a steel cage match. Like, what's the point of, you know, like, it just didn't make sense.
Yeah, I think it was just added because of the Extreme Rules name. I will say, I wanted Lashley to win this match, but I actually did really like how it ended with them kind of going through that box and then Braun Strowman punching his way out.
That was a cool visual.
Yeah, it was a little cartoony, but I liked it. It was fun. It was a fun little way to add, instead of just a, you know, them both in the ring and one of them crawling to the ropes and doing the, you know, at the nine. It was a fun, kind of a fun way to end it, but it does. I think it leaves Lashley in a tough spot because he was destroyed. He survived the Braun Strowman attack. Then he squashed Ray. Now he lost. I believe he'd be great in a tag team. I think mm-hmm. they should just legitimately tag him up with someone like a Baron Corbin who can kind of do some talking and get some heat. But then just two big guys. There's not really a good bruiser tag team mm-hmm. right now. I mean, there's, like, the Viking Raiders, but they actually move so fluidly, I don't think of them as just a bruiser team. Yeah. So there's not really a good, just two big...
Two hosses, as they called them back in the day.
Right. Yeah. Hosses, yeah.
Yeah, I think those two guys would be a good, you know, as we had discussed, kind of using the APA template and just kind of saying, just kind of do that and be a tag team, just a normal tag team that competes with, like, the Usos or anyone else.
Yeah. I agree with you. I don't like Last Man Standing matches. My least favorite stipulation is the cage, but Last Man Standing matches do feel like they defy the concept of wrestling, right?
I hate mixed tag matches.
Okay.
Don't even get me started about a mixed tag elimination match. But we saw AJ Styles versus Ricochet for the United States Championship. To me, this finish was surprising. I didn't think they was going to finish this way. But what did you guys think of the match? You know, on paper, this should be like the best match ever, right? But like, and it was good. It was good. But yeah. what'd you guys think? Like, overall, like, AJ Styles winning the championship again? And does it take away from him being in the main event? Like, does he belong in that Universal title picture?
I think AJ Styles can always be in the Universal title picture, but for now, it's way more important to build that Raw mid-card. The brand is a big donut, you'll see. They'll open strong. They'll be like an hour or so of, like, filler in your main event. You need something as strong as AJ. You can show that brand it's about wrestling. He has a group now, trying to reestablish what the club is doing. And Ricochet really acquitted himself well. I mean, anyone I can think of, from signing to being on the main roster, Ricochet's been in the fast track, and he's never disappointed. He's never dropped the ball. His matches have been solid. People are going one and only. I mean, I think it was good for everyone involved. I had Ricochet retaining, but other than that, I mean, you can't complain what it got today.
Yeah, I think we're going to get sort of, speaking of like APA template, this is going to be, I believe, the club is going to have the Undisputed Era 2018 template, where they're treated like a main event group, and they act kind of like a main event group, but the leader has the mid-card title. And I think they'll probably run with that for a little bit because Flobo, as you'd mentioned, they do need the mid-card to get built up a bit. And AJ is one of those guys that is so flexible in where you can put him and what you can do with him that I don't think it hurts him to be in the mid-card. He's still great. And he could be in the mid-card for a year and a half and then suddenly put in main event. And you go, okay, that's cool.
It happened last year. He was like U.S. champion 1 month. The next month he won WWE champion against Jinder Mahal.
Yeah.
Do you think Finn Balor at some point gets put into this whole program that we're doing?
That should happen because everyone's been asking for it. It's not the real Club of Baylor. And that would be kind of cool because of what happened today. The question I have now is, how will it be different this time than what it was in Japan? But I'm interested in it.
I don't know if I want Finn Balor to get involved in it. I know that that's what it was in Japan, and I know fans of the Bullet Club are probably going to say, no, it needs to be like it was in Japan, but I don't think it needs to be.
It's funny because they were never together in Japan.
No.
AJ Styles joined Bullet Club when Finn Balor left.
Right, exactly.
Right, so I don't think you need just, oh, you used to be in Bullet Club, you're going to be in Bullet Club now. Mm-hmm. I think Finn is a great face. I think he works great as he is now. I think they could do more with him, but I don't think he needs to be in that group. I would love to see them add members, but I don't think it needs to be Finn just because something he was a part of years ago.
I mean, I'm just waiting to see AJ versus Rey Mysterio, which I'm hoping happens in the next day or two. But a match that I think has been getting a lot of praise is Aleister Black versus Cesaro. I know once it was officially announced on SmackDown, a lot of people were buzzing about this. You know, I think they might have wrestled on the Indies as well. I think I saw some images or some videos. What were your guys' thoughts on this match? From all accounts, this was a lot of people's favorite match of the night.
Yeah, this was the match that going into today, I was like, I gotta watch this live. I gotta, like, you know, make sure I have my snacks all ready for this. Aleister Black on the main roster has been a bit of a disappointment with the please come fight me thing. I know Jack has his own opinions about that. Having Cesaro announcing was perfect because there's a guy that was in that mid-card on Raw. Was new tights, new music, when they hit someone. The match itself was great. I love the way how each guy sold each other's moves, makes each other look good. Mm-hmm. And that finish looked like it absolutely hurt. That reaction Cesaro day, it looked like it was like a legit match. So props to everyone involved. I'm glad that Aleister Black's character is very much as it is right now, as it was in NXT. Nothing too crazy. And Cesaro has a great upside. So,
yeah, this was one of those matches I loved, but I hated because I love both the wrestlers. And the whole time I was like, no, I want him. You know, whenever one of them started to get ahead, I'd say, no, I don't want that. I don't want the other guy to lose. And I'd say, then they'd switch spots. I'd say, no, I don't want that guy to lose either. Because I'm a really big fan of both of them. Obviously, I think Black had to go over tonight because if he lost, he'd look like such a chump trying to call someone out for 8 weeks and then losing. But I think the Black Mass is a really good finish. I was about to say phenomenal, but that's not allowed to use that for anyone but AJ. But the way he hit that out of – he can just – hit it out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. It totally caught me off guard. Kind of the exact opposite of what happened with the Kofi Kingston match, where it totally caught me off guard, and Cesaro sold it so well. He looked like he was legitimately knocked out when it hit him. I'm really happy to see Aleister Black actually in a match, doing well. I hope they push him. I think he has all the things you need to be a great wrestler in the WWE. Again, one of those guys that if someone who doesn't watch wrestling saw him, they'd go, what's this guy's thing? His entrance is cool. Mm-hmm. His moves are cool. He looks cool. So I'm really glad at how it turned out. I thought it was one of the best matches of the night as well. I just hope that something is there for Cesaro, because I think that guy's amazing as well.
Hopefully there's good things. And from all accounts, he looks to be on Monday Night Raw. Paul Heyman's always been a big fan of Cesaro, so hopefully that goes wrong. Well, let me ask you something real quick, Jack. Do you watch 205 Live?
I used to. Honestly, I haven't been caught up for the past few months.
Now, what do you think, because of that, they felt well on the pre-show? Because a lot of people say they should be on the main card, but again, they're an internet show.
Yeah.
So do you think they belong on the main card, or you think they're perfectly fine getting that extra exposure on, you know, the free YouTube pre-show?
I think they should be on the pre-show. I think they're great on the pre-show. Mm-hmm. Their shows are always, their matches are always really entertaining. And Drew Gulak, I think, is one of those guys that it's amazing how, even if you're not watching the show, he feels like a legitimate person to have a match, to see a match of. And using that, because I do follow like NXT, mm-hmm. and he'll come in on NXT every mm-hmm. now and again. And if you don't watch 205 Live, you'd say, who is this guy? But he still has that, oh, this is an important person to watch wrestle. He had that tonight. I thought their match was cool, but I don't follow the show as much as I should, just being honest there. But I think it's fine on the pre-show. I don't think you need to force it on people on the main show or on the main card if people don't watch 205.
Sure.
Because what people forget too when they say stuff like that is, if you're going to put them on the main card, you got to take someone else off.
Yeah.
And I don't know who I would take off and put on the pre-show.
Or too many. Like, think about it. Like, this show, and I think Kevin Owens kind of attested to it, they had no Randy Orton, no Rey Mysterio, no, like, a lot of other people that was like, wait, I forgot Andrade. That they're there. Yeah, Rusev. Like, where's Rusev been these days, you know? Speaking of Finn Balor earlier, he had a match with Nakamura for the Intercontinental Champion, which Nakamura became champion. I saw a funny tweet that said he was the first person to win, like, WWE and IWGP Intercontinental Championship. Jericho responded, was like,
question mark?
Yeah, like, hello, I think it's me.
He doesn't exist in WWE anymore.
Oh, would you guys think of this match? And real quickly, last year, we kind of saw Nakamura in the WWE Championship picture. 2 years ago, we saw, like, this was like the dream match in NXT. Now they're on, we just mentioned it, the pre-show. Like, is this something that they deserve to be on the main show?
Well, those two talents are always going to burn the house down because their styles are complementary. Last week on SmackDown, Nakamura had a new aggression that would totally fit his new character. But like you're saying, the pre-show can't be two prelim matches. One has to be main event quality or main event quality, and one has to be something experimental. So that being the pre-show didn't bother me. It was a title change on a pay-per-view with a lot of title changes, so I'm also fine with that. But if you're watching on the internet show and you're not really watching the main pay-per-view, you get to understand the new Nakamura and what Finn Balor can do. So it's a position that didn't bother me at all.
I think it should have been on the pre-show, and the reason is because I think it's good for Nakamura to have the title. It's going to help him rebuild his character and rebuild his presence. And I think this is going to lead to a push for Finn as well. I think he's going to probably move up the card mm-hmm. this way. And this way, him losing a title isn't showcased.
But do you think a match like this being on the pre-show is like a demotion in any ways? Because you don't see Roman on the pre-show.
No, I don't think it's a demotion. I think it's really just the mathematical idea of time. They only have so much time. And again, I think they want as few people seeing Finn lose as possible, because they're going to push him after this, I believe. I think he's going to get a push after this, mm-hmm. and they just didn't want everyone focusing on him losing in a big spot right before they push him. So now they can kind of transition the title to Nakamura and then push him, but not have everyone go, oh, he just lost to Nakamura, now he's getting a push.
So that's
my thought, anyways.
If you were to rank this pay-per-view between 1 and 77, where would you rank it at?
Oh, man, it's a solid, solid 49, you know, 52. No, I mean, it was a solid pay-per-view that just gets kind of lost in the shuffle because there's so many pay-per-views in the summertime, because that we have other brands that are building up too. But match per match, it was good. There were some decisions I didn't really like, but I won't say it was a bad pay-per-view. I mean, it just kind of let me in the mix this year.
I think it did everything it was supposed to do. I don't think anyone's going to look back 10 years from now and talk about Extreme Rules 2019 and how it changed the game or anything, but I think it did its job. There was a lot of storylines I think a lot of people weren't super happy about that it had to wrap up, and it did that, and now we can move on from them. It set the stage for what is looking to be a new era in WWE, mm-hmm. with some management changes for Raw and SmackDown. And so I think it did its job. I thought the matches were entertaining, and that's all you can ask for at the end of the day. And so I thought it was good. Not the most memorable, amazing show, but I was happy with it. I enjoyed watching it.
All right, just one last question. Will you guys come back for the SummerSlam after show?
Absolutely.
Yes. SummerSlam is my favorite movie of the year.
They're going to be here. Yes. Contract accepted. yes. But real quick, where can everybody find you? We're about wrapping up. Thank you for watching, everybody, on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes, et cetera, et cetera. But where can people find you if they want to keep the conversation going?
Oh, yeah.
On whatever you want.
Excellent. I'm on Twitter, at FloboBoys, on Instagram, at Flobito, and Flobito.com. This Thursday, San Diego Comic-Con, I'll be there. The Not-So-Strange Bedfellows panel. I'll be a panelist. Come out, say hello, let's get some photos.
And you can find me at jackcfarmer.com or at RealJackFarmer across all social media. And this was my second show, so if you want to see more of me, make sure to comment in the comments section that you enjoyed having me here. Hashtag bring back Jack, and maybe you'll see some more of me.
Hashtag bring back Jack. I am George Hermoza, GHERMOZA. You can come this Friday night, Burbank, California, Wrestling Pro Wrestling. It's going to be fun. I think it's called Kumite, but not just Blood Sport, something like that. It's a great show. Anyway, nice. Follow them on Wrestling Wrestling, Facebook, Instagram. Thank you very much for watching. We will see you guys at SummerSlam here in AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.